Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to another Invest with Clarity podcast with Mark Pearson. Today, our topic is ignorance is not bliss. Where are we going today there, brother?
Not.
It's not.
You know the old saying, ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
Not when it comes to your money, to your moolah.
No. Sounds terrible.
It's not bliss. This is the foundational component of the power behind knowing what you own and why you own it. You know, let me start out with this. I used to play this fun little game with financial advisors, and the game was, because they would, I would say, are you a money manager? Because financial advisors always liked, you remember back in the day, all financial advisors said, hey, I'm a money manager and not necessarily a financial advisor. I manage money for a living. And I'd say, oh, really? So what's your largest holding? I mean, if I may ask for some free, you know, some free stock tips, what's your largest holding? And they would always say a mutual fund. Well, Growth Fund of America.
Yeah, American funds.
Contra fund, whatever yeah, the case totally. May be. And I'd say, no, not the largest fund you own. What's your largest holding? And not one advisor was ever able to answer it. And I would put that on the listeners today. What is your largest holding? Not what fund or ETF. What company is your largest holding? And then the next question would be, and what percent is that number one holding of your overall portfolio? If you cannot answer those two questions, you are the subject of today's podcast. Ignorance is not bliss. So I find it interesting that financial advisors would call themselves money managers when they don't even know what their largest holding is in their portfolio. Because if they don't know what their largest holding in their portfolio, that means that the client doesn't know. And if the client doesn't know, then factually speaking, that client has a level of risk in their portfolio that they're completely unaware of.
And I don't necessarily believe that the advisor is truly acting in a fiduciary manner, knowing what's in the client's best interest if they can't even explain what the client is invested in.
Well, I think that's a legitimate point. I think that's a fair point, and that's an accurate point, because as a fiduciary, you go pick a mutual fund or you go pick an exchange-traded fund and put it in the client's account. The problem with that is you don't know what kind of activity those funds are doing. You don't know what they're buying and when they're buying it. You don't know what they're selling and when they're selling it. And I've said this on a recent podcast, isn't it? Or maybe I told this to somebody, I can't remember anymore. But I basically said, don't you want every possible advantage you can when it comes to your money? Every person's going to say, of course I do. I would want every advantage I could have. Well, shouldn't that start with what are your top three, top five holdings, and what percentage do they make in your portfolio, so you understand fundamentally what kind of risks you have? There have been, as you know, Matt, many mutual funds in the past who have gone out in a blaze of glory only to fizzle out and disappear at the end of the day. Prominent money managers who are called geniuses, who are called they're super smart, that they know what they're doing, have fallen into oblivion because the way their portfolio was structured was frankly not necessarily in the client's best interest. Now, the money manager may have done it, and basically could say, look, it's the advisor's job to know what I own in my mutual fund and the associated risk. But the problem with that is, as you know, mutual funds and exchange traded funds do not report their holdings until the end of the quarter. And by the time that report comes out, a 13D or 13F, that portfolio could already have changed, right? That's why the SMA, separately managed account, you and I have talked about, we believe is the most efficient, effective way for a client to have their investment funds managed. It has more flexibility, it has greater transparency, and the client has the ability to see real time what's happening in their portfolio.
You know, one of the things that makes me giggle is I walk into financial advisors' offices, or I used to as a consultant, right? They used to pay me a lot of money to go in and interview their team and help them make adjustments to their practice. And right. The first thing that I would see when I'd walk in is CNBC, right? And, you know, tickers and people yelling and screaming. And then when I would go back and talk to the advisor would say, well, you know, I don't use individual stocks. I'm like, what in God's name do you have going on in your lobby? Like, you're totally misrepresenting anything going on with the client. And then the best part would be is they'd get so frustrated. They'd get so frustrated that their clients always wanted to talk about performance because they positioned themselves as money managers, not as what they actually are, which were, in these cases, mostly financial planners. So what do you think about that?
I think that's an extremely legit, very good insight and strong point. I think that when a client comes in, the problem the client has is they don't know what they own. They don't know why they own it. And so the only thing they can really focus on is performance and fees. What else are you going to focus on, right? And so the advisor puts themselves at a disadvantage. They put the client at a disadvantage because what else is the client going to really ask about? And not only that, it potentially sets up poor expectations in the future as well. And clients will say, I moved my money because I thought that this financial advisor, you know, he just didn't do a good job with my money. The problem with that financial advisors have is they are a middleman between the client and the money manager. They're the middleman. I don't want to be the middleman. I want the client to be able to go directly to the firm that really manages the money. Hey, I own XYZ. Why do I own it? Right? ABC is struggling. Why do I own it? Now, I'm going to talk out of both sides of my mouth there for a second, Biggie. As we train our advisors, no one stock should make or break the portfolio performance. It's like I used to use the automobile analogy. No one knows who made the air conditioning. Nobody knows who makes the brakes. Nobody knows who makes the spark plugs. All the driver knows is that when they get in the car and they press the button or turn the key, the car's going to drive. In other words, you can't drive a car with no wheels. You can't drive a car with no brakes. Every position in your portfolio is owned for a specific reason to accomplish your goals. And as we've talked about amply before, you're dead right. The advisor has set himself or herself up as the portfolio manager of their money, the fiduciary of their money, and they don't even know what the client owns. They're going off of what? Historical performance of the funds to make the decision to own that investment. Mm-hmm. And they don't even know how that historical performance was garnered. In other words, there's a reason why when you read financial documentation, it says past performance is not indicative of future performance. There's a reason that's put on there. It's because it's true. So Mr. and Mrs. Investor, that document is telling you, don't look at returns.
Right. That's why That's why I've never understood. One of the early financial advisors that I met said, don't ever read the prospectus crap that you get in the mail. He said, first off, it doesn't make any sense. And secondly, it's not applicable at all. Now, okay, so defend this. I'm always trying to get you, dude. I've never been able to successfully do this. But I have heard many advisors say that I'm the manager of managers.
Yeah. So you want me to tell you why I think that's...
Well, I just want to know what you think about that. I mean, you know,
How can you manage a manager when you don't work directly with them?
Well, I don't know. But I mean, that's been a sales technique that the advisor, I'm sure a lot of the listeners have heard that from advisors before, is, you know, my job is to find the best investment managers for you instead of managing the money myself.
Yeah. Well, you go to a company and you got managers all in every company, right? And managers manage other managers and so on and so forth, right? It's called your hierarchy in a corporation, right? The difference is that those managers can communicate directly on a daily basis with the other managers so they can manage them. How can a financial advisor manage managers of money that they never talk to, that they don't work with on a daily basis directly? Again, another disadvantage of using mutual funds and exchange-traded funds. And the idea, I hate to say, but you are not a money manager. And when you say you're a manager of managers, no, you're not. What you are doing is you are doing exactly what every piece of financial brochure on investment says. Past performance is not indicative of future performance, but what are you going to do as an advisor? You're going to look at the past performance of that money manager and say, I think that this makes sense. And I'm going to take a chance on this manager. Now, there are good mutual fund managers who have been consistently very good. And this gets into a topic that we're going to talk more about in the future with Chuck, our head of research, which is the idea of conviction. Very good money managers have a high level of conviction when it comes to the decisions that they make in portfolios. A lot of money managers don't. A lot of money managers, for example, during COVID, deviated from process. They did not keep the conviction. This happens with a lot of managers. And oh, by the way, part of the problem that a lot of managers have is that what is in the prospectus that's important for people to know is there is a very strong potential that the money manager is very limited in scope in what they can do and can't do in that mutual fund. They only can keep X amount of cash. They can only own X percent of a company. They can only do this amount of selling or buying. They are deviating from process when there are liquidations out of the fund that forces the money manager to sell positions at a gain or a profit, which may not be in the best interest of all the other shareholders, but they have to do it because they've got to raise the cash to get the money out. These are direct examples of why the separately managed account is, in our opinion, the best investment process to use. Ignorance is not bliss. Don't be ignorant. Have the ability to know what's going on in your portfolio and why.
Yeah.
We've talked about the QIB study in the past, it's a behavioral study.
Yeah, totally.
And they look at investor behavior every year and performance of those individual investors relative to quote unquote indexes. And consistently every year, individual investors consistently dramatically underperform indexes. Now, we're not advocates of indexing. So don't necessarily think that I'm saying this because I'm a guy who believes that you should compare the performance of an individual investor to an index. But what I am saying is it is important as an investor to know where these potential weaknesses are or disadvantages that could inhibit my ability to invest successfully. And the bottom line is on this, the 2020 report was released and same sort of thing happened. And the report cited as one of its top get this. So it tells you why, you know, they're all doing bad and why investors are not successful. It's all behavioral driven. Know your behavioral biases. Go back to the podcast. We did 3-part series on behavioral biases. Know your biases. If you're an investor right now and you don't know what your biases are, again, another significant disadvantage to your ability to be a successful investor. Today, I've told people 2 things that could significantly, I have to say, potentially enhance their ability to be a successful investor, right? But get this, Uncle Matt. The report cited as one of its top suggestions to financial advisors in how to deliver a calming message to their clients is to make them aware of their own behavioral biases, what I just said, right? This awareness includes knowing what holdings you have in your portfolio. In times of market stress and turmoil, clarity is paramount in battling fear and unrest, and dare I say, their biases. You've said it many times before. COVID was a great example of that. The biases can come out. Now, in all fairness to the investor, of course, Matt, they may not be able to know what's in their portfolio because they may have a bunch of mutual funds and exchange-traded funds in their portfolio that, frankly, they're not going to be able to know what they own unless they really know how to do a deep dive on that. Most people aren't willing to do that deep dive because it costs money to usually get that data. And again, that data is outdated anyways. You see what I'm getting to about ignorance? Don't be ignorant.
I do. It's eye-opening, frustrating, and moderately terrifying that people would rather just close their eyes, la, 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 I don't want to do it, I don't want to do it. Now I have another quick question for you before we wrap up today.
Yep.
Which is this. You talked about people not sticking to the knitting, and we have seen a lot of this. And in fact, I was just talking to a friend of mine who's an advisor outside of Chicago. And one of the things that he said was he had a client who came in who was upset that he didn't make enough trades over the last 4 months. And he's like, I don't know what to say to this guy. And I was like, I know somebody who does know what to say to you. So I'll punt that back to you, brother. What do you got?
Right. Dead on. Well, I've got a financial advisor friend who had the same problem. He is the relationship manager for high net worth people. And high net worth people in general are fairly savvy investors. They're smart people. There's a reason why they've got a lot of money if they did it on their own. And COVID, here's what COVID did, in my opinion. COVID was the straw that broke the camel's back that passive investing in indexing is a flawed strategy, period. Because you never know when a black swan event is going to happen. And it goes back to the four keys to successful investing. So I'm tying this all together for you. The four keys to successful investing are your investment philosophy, your strategy. Those are the empirical components of your investing. The flexibility and the transparency is the behavioral aspect of investing, and you need both to be a successful investor. And when you have clients who are higher net worth, they're going to ask that kind of question. A lot of people are asking that question. Even novice investors, clients are asking, because first of all, this is really the first black swan event where the market really crashed quickly, 35% since 9/11, which has now been basically almost 19 years ago. So you have gone 19 years without a massive downturn in the markets that created an opportunity to buy great businesses on sale. And frankly, even during that period, you could have been doing static rebalancing of these mutual funds and ETFs to force yourself to buy low and sell high. And again, that client is an example, Matt, of what I really believe is the changing of the guard from passive investing to active investing. Interestingly enough, this is what happened in 1998, 1999. And even 97, when that was really the beginning era of buying index funds, and mutual funds were producing their own index funds and financial advisors were using the index funds. And then March of 2000 hit and kaboom, everything went into the toilet and people got stuck going, holy cow. And so active investing really after that point really started to pick up. And you could have bought some unbelievable businesses you can still own today and have done very well. We've got businesses, by the way. I'll tell you, we bought Visa and MasterCard the day they went public, and that was 2006, 2007 era. Visa may have even gone public in 08. I can't remember. But anyway, these stocks got hammered by 50, 60, 70% during the financial crisis. And if you would have bought them at that time, even after you bought them when they went public, you would be up 500, 600, 700, 800% today on those companies if you just held them. And so obviously, if for butts and candy were nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas. That's if you would have held them. But the reality is, the point of what I'm trying to say is, if you were an investor at Nepsis in 2008, 2007, I would have asked you, why do you want me to sell Visa and MasterCard? I mean, do you really think they're going to go away? And they'd say, no. So investors really don't even know what questions to ask because they've been trained by the media and the financial advisors, frankly, to ask the wrong questions. The wrong questions are, what's your performance and how much do you charge? Those are the wrong questions. In fact, you want to hire someone who charges 50% if you've got great returns, because clearly, I mean, I used to say to clients all the time, if my fee was 50% a year, would you hire me? And every single one of them said no. Not one person would say, Matt, which depends on my returns.
That's brutal.
And if I said to you, it's 50%, but after fees, the return was 150%, would you pay me 50% then? For sure.
Ding, 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 ding.
Right? So clients don't even really know what questions to ask their advisor because they have been so trained on performance, 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 and fees, fees, fees. As I used to say in my old radio show, we have now relegated investing to the absolute absurd. Cheap, 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 and index, index, index. In other words, promoting ignorance. That's the deal.
That's the deal. Well, I hope that this podcast will shake, rattle, and roll some people to make them realize that, you know what, not knowing is a really horrible, horrible thing, and not knowing what's in your portfolio and what you're invested in, but also not understanding your true behavioral biases and not understanding your relationship to money really is going to put you at a major, major disadvantage. In fact, well, my opinion is will probably not help you achieve your long-term investment goals. Mark, thanks for your brain again today, brother.
My pleasure. Always good to be with you.
If you have not subscribed to the podcast, make sure you click that subscribe now button below. That way, every time we come out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. And if you have not followed Nepsis or Invest with Clarity on social media, please make sure that you do, because they're always putting out really, really great stuff to remind you what it means to be a great investor. So for everybody at Nepsis and Invest with Clarity, this is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.